Get ready for takeoff. This is a First Class Podcast. All things Winnipeg Jets hockey. The flight starts now. Welcome to another edition of the First Class Podcast. All things Winnipeg Jets hockey. Tim Bigelow and Warren Smith with you. It is Monday, March 26th when we are recording this. So we all, like you probably did, enjoyed the overtime shootout thriller that was the Jets playing Nashville last night that allowed the Winnipeg Jets to clinch a playoff spot. So we want to make mention of that. Having said that, we are, but you know, I think we had a whole week where we just had a gap where we actually just need to catch up on stuff. We left off on the road trip with a game in Philadelphia, so we kind of are going to get up to speed over a pair of episodes in this week. Thankfully, reading week is going to help us out with that one, with Warren's schedule.
Spring break, beauty.
So yeah, we acknowledge at this point while we're recording this that the Jets, of course, have clinched the playoff spot and moved to within 5 points of the Nashville Predators for a top spot in the conference, because they're sitting 1-2 now, actually moved a point ahead of Las Vegas even with the win last night.
So make sure you keep your whites clean and ready to go. It's almost whiteout time. We're all pretty stoked about that.
It's interesting because I think back to when we were doing that last podcast, and now it's really only been about 7 games. By the time we get done that, the next bit of this will include the Boston game, which will be when you guys are listening to this tonight. And they talk about two teams in the Central Division that in this stretch just completely flip sides. When I went to bed last night, Dallas had completely tanked, and St. Louis was holding the second wild card spot, which, humor me not, if the Jets could catch Nashville and St. Louis continues to play, or Dallas just continues to tank out, Paul Statsnik could get to play the team that let him go at the deadline in the first round.
Talk about a storyline. Yeah, that's a really intriguing storyline. Nobody's really talking about that because I think most people don't expect, you know, not many games left for the Jets to close the gap with the Predators, but that would be unbelievable.
Before the Predators had actually come in here, they actually lost 2 games in a row, finally. And so this would be like their third loss, even though they did get the extra point. They're not that far off, and the schedule is going out for the rest of the season. You probably say that the Jets had the easier schedule once they get past the Boston matchup, where Nashville's got some tough games in there, and playing teams that are still fighting for their lives. So they got a pair of games, I think, with Mini still in the mix. They're going to be playing some teams that are needing those points to get in. It's just to say, nothing's etched in stone now. Still a bit of a mountain to climb, but the Jets have 7 games left, 14 points on the board, 5-point swing.
The travesty of it all is the fact that the Winnipeg Jets and the Nashville Predators aren't going to be meeting up in the conference finals.
How many people have you noticed on media, like across the board, and I'm thinking nationally more than locally,
that don't understand that?
Yeah, that don't understand. They're like, oh, I can't wait for the conference finals. Hello, have you looked at our playoff format?
Hey, I guess it's wishful thinking. Like, that would be the place you want the two best teams in the Western Conference to meet up. And how it's set up, that's not going to happen. If these two teams clash, which, I mean, just from a hockey fan standpoint, everybody wants to happen because it's amazing hockey.
Round two on both sides is going to be the best series.
And you know what I was thinking is, like, to myself today, I was just, what if the Jets, I wish the Predators were in the other conference because that would be a Stanley Cup Finals. No slouch to T-Bay or any of the teams in the East, and we don't follow them nearly as closely, but man, that should be the Stanley Cup Final. Like, obviously, that's not the case, but you want the best two teams in the league, and the Predators have been the best team in the league, absolutely running the table until they ran into the Jets this last game, really. Yeah, it's just one of those things, and it just doesn't seem to serve the playoffs justice having to meet in the semifinals. I hate this new setup. You know, I like the old school, 1-8, 2-7, 3-6, 4-5. Let's just...
It would be nice if they go back to that. There's going to be a big push, and it's going to come out of Toronto, and the media is going to be moaned. this system that we currently have. Because as much as we talk about Nashville, Winnipeg having to play in round two, there are going to be a bunch of sour grapes in Toronto when Toronto finishes third in the conference and basically has to play Boston or Tampa in round one and then play the other team in round two.
So usually the East Coast bias that just pisses us off here in Manitoba, you know, who knows, maybe it'll work to our benefit because we're looking ahead to the future and the stretch that we have of going for the cup. You know, we hate this setup. There's no reason. I don't know. I get why they did it, but I think long term it just doesn't make sense.
The idea was it was going to create rivalries by having teams play each other more often in the early rounds. Except that when a division is way stronger than its counterpart in the same conference, then by the time you get to the conference finals, the two best teams have already played each other. And so there is a letdown between the conference finals to the cup finals in the quality of the matchup.
And, you know, we expect if it's the Jets and Preds in the semis, like, you know, everybody kind of anticipates, those two teams are going to be beating the shit out of each other. And by the time you get to the conference finals, how healthy are either one of those teams? Whichever way it goes, you know, that other path to the finals is way easier.
Yeah. Well, unless Vegas all of a sudden becomes a heavy, heavy team, which I can't see happening. But, you know, on the flip side of it, that's the way the system is now. So we can say all we want about how it really isn't as good as the 1-8 system that we used to have. And at this point, yeah, the Jets would be sitting in that 2 spot, taking on what would be another wild card team, really a 7 seed. And instead, they're going to match up against a, 4th best team probably in the conference.
I suppose the glass half full side of this is, you know, knock wood, cross fingers, all that, that the Jets get through the Predators and make it to the conference finals, it could be an easier path to the Stanley Cup finals in that final series. And you're taking maybe a little bit less punishment before making it to the Stanley Cup. But that's a long ways away. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Just interesting.
Yeah, there's a long way. How they go and what happens on it. There's still going to be, you can't sit here and even predict the matchups for the playoffs because there is such a logjam at the bottom end of the conference right now that, you know, certain spots in the divisions can flip out. You know, even Minnesota has a touch of room. They're not completely safe based on who they have to finish playing out against, that they're not, you know, going to have some issues with being able to hold on to third and end up in a wild card spot. There's a lot of things at play here.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I was on that Facebook Messenger after the game, and it's funny the kinds of fans that are on those things sometimes. Everybody's already, you know, celebrating the parade, and I'm hopeful for that to happen, but you can't put the cart before the horse. It's the playoffs are no joke. And you know what? A team that's right on the bubble right now is the Colorado Avalanche. They've been playing really good hockey. You know, Minnie just did knock off the Predators, and they've been a tough playoff team the last few years. I'm not really sure there is an easy road. And, of course, Las Vegas, the story of Vegas this year, how well they have played. And they're really good at home, and they're going to have home ice advantage in a series, too. I don't know. I don't think there's an easy path, and that's what makes this fun, is that, you know, there's a chance that every series could go 6 or 7 games.
Let's say, you know, they play for the Cup, and it's going to be an interesting year this year because there's just some different players in the mix. When you think that Winnipeg's going to be in the dance, when you think Vegas, a first-year team, is going to be in the dance, just on the Western Conference, you know, Nashville, instead of sneaking into 8th spot, is sitting in, you know, the 1 spot or 1-2 spot, potentially, going into the playoffs. There's going to be some different teams in the mix. You're not going to have to see the Chicago Blackhawks, the Oilers, who were in it last year and had a bit of a run, aren't making the playoffs this year. There's just some different teams.
And the perennial Stanley Cup contender, Chicago Blackhawks, aren't even in the playoffs. Yeah. Officially eliminated.
Yeah, officially eliminated. We should add that. I didn't go through all the teams that were officially eliminated, but they were one of them. So when we dial back through where we left off with, we have to go back to basically Ovi versus Laine, when they both had 40 goals on the year, and the Jets were going into Washington to play the Capitals. This was in the midst of the road trip. The Jets, at that point, had won three and lost one on the road trip and had two more games, which was Washington and then the next night in Nashville. Now, Paul Maurice had said that he was going to do goaltender switch between the games. I mean, he was playing one guy one night and he was going to play another guy the other night, but he didn't tip his hat on which way he was going with it. It turns out he decided to play Hellebuck in the Washington game and then go with Hutchinson in the Nashville game, because this is before Hutchinson gets re-injured. There might be a bit of this. Guy returns, guy gets re-injured, guy returns within the next kind of podcast that we do with this thing. So this was Monday, March the 12th, when Washington and Winnipeg are playing. Breakdown of Laine and Ovechkin's goal scoring through the year is that Ovechkin just had a real quick start. In October, he had 10. November, he had 8. Then he kind of slowed down December, January with 6 apiece. Picked it up in February with 9. And then going into March, only had 1 goal. And I remember as we were going and finishing up the last podcast, I believe, Warren, you were saying, you know, Ovi's streaky and he's one of these guys that, you know, he hasn't had a lot lately, which just means he's about ready to explode again.
Yeah, well, I mean, goal scorers are like that. They score in bunches, you know, just like home run hitters in baseball. You know, they go through stretches where they, you know, every fourth at bat, they're hitting a dinger. And Ovechkin doesn't, you know, facing Laine, you know, sort of like the disciple, the kid that looked up to him, the next one that, you know, everybody now is ready to pass the torch, kind of like McDavid from Crosby. It's, you know, when it comes to snipers, there's, you know, that's the comparison to Ovi to Laine. Throwing that, you know, Ovi was Laine's hero growing up and who he envisioned being like when he grew up. So, yeah, no, a lot of storylines here. And, I mean, on top of it, Ovechkin was going for his 600th goal, which is a monumental thing in today's hockey. It had all the makings for Ovechkin stepping up his game and Laine being right there with him.
So Laine's goal total by month, he had 4 in October, 7 in November, 7 in December, 5 in January, and then he picked up the pace getting 8 in February and 9 in March. Now keep in mind, it's more than 9 at this point in March because March isn't over yet. This is just going into the Washington game. Laine's on an 11-game point streak at this point, which was more goals than it was assists in that point streak. I remember one of the last things we were joking about is that after the last game that the Jets had played, the Jets had, Laine had as many goals as St. Louis had the like previous week as a team. And that team has Steen and Tarasenko and, you know, guys who can score. Like, not just, it's not like they were comparing it to Arizona or something. I don't, you know. And Ovi's too shy of the 600 goal mark. So that was kind of like, obviously the national media and everybody wants to make storylines out of it, but it's a storyline. They were tied, you know what, 40 apiece going into the game.
You got the Ovi Laine storyline. You have the point streak for Laine. You know, both teams are high up in the standings, you know, making their final playoff push. So it had all the makings of a good hockey game.
In fact, Washington was sitting second in the Metro, and they're battling and still battling with Pittsburgh and even Philadelphia, I believe, for seeding 1 through 3 in their division on that side. Meanwhile, as I alluded to, the Eastern Conference, really it is, Tampa Bay, Boston's 2 points behind them, and Toronto, those guys are all in the other division. They all have more points than the rest of than Washington, Pittsburgh, Philly, Jersey, Columbus, and I guess Florida would be other team in the mix on the Eastern Conference, which we don't follow that often. But Washington still has to win games if they're going to finish and get some home ice advantage going into the playoffs, at least divisionally, which, you know, would be a round or two at best. So they're 23-9-2 at home. Goals for 12th in the league. Their power play was sitting around 6. Goals against 16th. Penalty killing is 20th. And about 13th in the faceoff department. You know, this is a team that for years was perennially up there for the President's Trophy.
I would say arguably the Washington Capitals, along with the San Jose Sharks, have kind of been, of our generation, of the past decade, two of the biggest disappointments. When you look like at the fact that they've been, you know, that number one or number two seed for forever, and they just can't get over the hump, and that's, you know, partly because they keep running into the Pittsburgh Penguins. But I mean, they're known to have very big regular seasons, and then when it comes to crunch time, just not being able to perform, including Ovechkin himself, who has put up decent numbers, but nothing mind-boggling. No Conn Smythe type playoffs for him yet.
And they're having a really extremely average season by Washington standards. Now, most teams would be happy to be second in division, which puts them about fifth in the conference, by the way. That's worth mentioning. But here's a team that was 5-5 in their last 10. Win one, lose one. They had a 2-0 win over San Jose on Saturday, which was 2 days before this game gets played. But when you look at those numbers, the Jets 17-11-7 away from MTS place. Goals for, the Jets are fourth. Their power play is second. Goals against, fifth in the league. Penalty killing, fifth in the league. And faceoff, fifth in the league. And the Jets have more points than Washington going into this, also being a second place divisional team, because second in the Central at this point. Just to say, you see Washington being, you know, yeah, once across that board during the regular season and then tanking in the playoffs.
I would argue, too, that it was kind of like the script being flipped a little bit with the success of the Winnipeg Jets this season. It was almost like the caps got up for the Jets. You know, we've been noticing that lately. Teams bringing their A game, you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
You used the word measuring stick.
Measuring stick, yeah. So usually when the Jets have been playing the Caps or the Penguins and teams like that in the past, you know, they looked at it as a measuring stick. And Blake Wheeler referred to that when he talked about the Predators, but he didn't say that about playing the Capitals this year, because this year the Jets are one of the top dogs. And I think, you know, from here on out till the end of the season, every game is going to feel like a playoff game, and it has felt like that the last little while. Every team knows that when they play the Winnipeg Jets, they better bring it. If not, they could get embarrassed. And I think that's the difference this year from years past.
That's probably true of it. They're definitely, from a team perspective on it, the Jets are, yeah, one of the elite teams this year. And so there's only so many teams that they would refer to as a measuring stick game, and that never really came up in the conversation. Having that as a sidebar, and then considering they're in Washington too for this game, like it's a road game too, and they're not really talking about that. Mark Scheifele wasn't in the lineup. Adam Lowry wasn't in the lineup. Jacob Trouba wasn't in the lineup. Toby Enstrom wasn't in the lineup. Dmitry Kulikov was not in the lineup. And Steve Mason was also not in the lineup. In fact, Kulikov had returned to Winnipeg for further evaluation this March 12th. He has been evaluated, changed his mind on surgery, and whether we see him again this year is up in the air. And I should mention, although Enstrom has been getting some spot play and here and there in these games at home and on this trip, before the Nashville game, Paul Maurice said he was shutting him down for the year. He won't play another regular season game.
Apparently he's been banged up all year, playing hurt. So, you know, if that's the smart decision, no point bringing him back. We've got more than serviceable guys ready to go in his stead. So that's a good decision by Paul Maurice. And then, you know, you cross that bridge when you get to it.
Well, he says next week Toby Enstrom will want to play again. He'll just bang down the office door and want to get in the lineup. And it is insurance, because we're now down, even at this point, to having 6 of 9 serviceable defense. I mean, Tucker Pullman's back up, you know, playing games again. So one more guy goes down, you know, you might have to ask Toby, even though he's hurt, to step in and take on some bottom 6 minutes. It's entirely possible. But he wasn't on this game. So when you think about it, that's three. I just want to put that in perspective. That's three of the top six guys.
Right. The Jets are missing heavy hitter X factor players, right? Game breakers.
Yeah.
You're talking about Scheifele. You're talking about your shutdown center and Adam Lowry, and then Jacob Trouba from the top pairing. I mean, that's no joke, and that wasn't really discussed
at all. While playing a Washington team that had everybody in there. Philip Grubauer is a Washington goaltender. Braden Holtby was struggling, and Grubauer has kind of taken over the net. So Holtby's kind of been, I guess, been getting some of the blame for Washington not being number one in the conference this year. Grubauer, 9-8-3, 2.25 goals against average, 9.25 save percentage, and a pair of shutouts since he's kind of been running the ball. Remember Holtby actually saying at one point when they decided to play Grubauer instead of him, he's like, wow, he's been playing better than me. It's a good decision if we want to win.
Yeah, he was pretty open and honest about feeling like his confidence was a little low at the time. He'd been struggling, and he understood the decision.
Connor Hellebuck did play net for the Winnipeg Jets. 35-11-8 going into this one, 2.38, with, of course, playing a lot more games than Grubauer. 9.23 save percentage and 6 shutouts going into this one. As you recall, this was all about the matchup with Ovi versus Laine. The first period didn't disappoint with that one. The Jets get into penalty trouble right off the hop of this game. 16:42, Brian Little takes a hooking penalty on Kuznetsov on a back check. And then 16:07, wow, on that penalty, Matt Hendricks gets tripping on Backstrom as Backstrom was entering the Jet zone. That puts Washington on a two-man advantage for a minute 25 as the first is getting underway.
I hate to say that this is going to be a theme throughout, but through these stretch of games, the Jets have been shorthanded 5-on-3 more than you'd like to. And yeah, brutal way to start the game for the Jets.
15:59, Carlson has a blast. Great blocker save by Connor Hellebuyck. But off a face-off win, Carlson gets it over to Ovi, just above the hash marks. It goes off a Myers skate. Ovechkin also gets it through the five-hole on Connor Hellebuyck. So 5-on-3 goal, Ovechkin off Myers skates in the net. His 41st, so he takes the lead in the goal-scoring race. Power play goal from Carlson and Backstrom, 5-on-3. Still a minute 18 on the power play to go for Washington. It's pretty straight.
1-0 Ovi versus Laine at this point.
Yeah. And 1-0 for Washington over Winnipeg, which is what really matters. You know, I think I joked while watching this game, I'm like, you know what, Ovi can have a hat trick if we win 4-3.
Yeah, of course.
I don't mind that. If the team wins, then I'd be happy.
As long as Laine gets one or two. You want him to stay within range, because as much as you don't give a shit about awards, it'd be pretty deadly if Laine got the rocket, right? Yeah. Even you, who doesn't like awards, don't act like if Laine wins the rocket, it doesn't mean a little something. Because the thing about the Rocket Richard Trophy, one, badass name, one of the best snipers of all time, and two, it's not one of those, an East Coast bias award, right? It's not a, you know, subjective thing. It's who scored the most goals. And Laine in his second season would be pretty fucking impressive.
Did you leave the TV on after the Jets clinched last night? Did you happen to catch the game out west?
No, I didn't.
No. Well, if you had to listen to these guys talk about the 8-1 favorite Edmonton Oilers, who are not making the playoffs, and yammer on about McDavid winning the scoring title and how he's going to, you know, keep get the points up there and win the scoring title on a team that isn't making the playoffs, and it's like, that's all you got. Oilers end up losing to Anaheim. Anaheim needed the points. They end up pulling out, you know, a win in overtime or however it goes. And all the media with the broadcast talking about McDavid and his stupid points.
You know, I've had a few conversations about this very thing lately. All of a sudden, I don't know if you've noticed this, but Wheels is no longer a Hart candidate. Have you noticed this?
Yeah.
Nobody even talks about him. Now he's out of the race because McDavid has jumped a lot of people, and there's still Kucherov there and, you know, Claude Giroux and just a bunch of guys that are considered to be heavier favorites. Based on goal totals and point totals, he's not that far off, but nobody talks about him. I had a conversation recently because of KC, Kyle Connor, and I was saying, you know, I know that Barzal has had an incredible year. Not to take anything away from him, you know what, he probably should win the Calder. But similar to Blake Wheeler, I said, what part does winning have to do with these awards? Shouldn't it matter? Does 15 or 20 points extra? Now, that's quite a bit, don't get me wrong. But if it's kind of like what you like to call garbage time, if you're talking about the NBA, or in a blowout win in baseball, or whatever the case may be, and in hockey, if you're getting goals when your team's still losing, does it matter as much? Or do overtime winners, do game winners, does that matter a little bit more? When you're contributing to a team that is a cup contender, even if you have less points, you know, lots of times it's that play that you make before the play that we talk about all the time, that third assist that creates the opportunity for the guys that get the points. Lots of times that happens with these guys, right? And Kyle Connor is a perfect example. If they kept track of a stat that's the third assist, he would have a lot of those this year. So yeah, Barzal has him in the points. And I've watched him play it every time. I've told you, right? I'm a big fan of his, and I'm a big fan of the New York Islanders. I like those guys, the ex-Eberle and Tavares. We've had this conversation a few times. But it just grinds my gears a little bit that it's such a slam dunk. Why, you know, Blake Wheeler, again, not to beat
a horse to death. Well, there's two conversations. But you're talking about the rookie, and you're talking about the MVP.
And they parallel. In
the Winnipeg scenario of it.
In that, yeah, both our guys are overlooked because of the points, that they're not quite there. They're close. In Connor, it's a fairly decent gap, but he is, we'll talk about it, you know, he has a really good shot to finish the year with the most goals in the NHL by a rookie, and I don't hear him talked about very often.
One, I don't disagree with you on that. Two, when I looked at it, because you bring this up, so I'm like, last time I didn't have the proof in the pudding. The only rookie that is a point per game player in the National Hockey League this year is Matt Barzal with the New York Islanders. That, to me, puts him far and above every other guy. Now, had Besser not got hurt, he also was letting it up on the goal total. Now, if Connor had caught Besser while Besser was still healthy, then you've got an argument. But the problem is because Besser now no longer had those extra games, then you look at the numbers and you say...
This is just my point. And then we can move on to the game. We got to get going on to the Washington, give you guys the breakdown of what happened in this game. But Norris Trophy the last couple of years too, the big sort of dilemma was, well, does Drew Doughty win it because he actually is the best defenseman? He was at that time. Or Erik Karlsson because he's more offensively gifted and puts up substantially more points. But if you had to go around the league and talk to the other players in the league, who's the toughest to play against? So in general, most of the time, these awards go to the guys who ever have the best points, point totals, right? Point per game totals. But other things that happen, the block shots, the hits, the leadership, drawing penalties, PK time, all the other things that go into winning hockey games, there needs to be a little bit more value to that and where your team sits. Now, that's all fine and dandy that Brock Besser is ripping it up. He got to be the, you know, all-star MVP. He was having a hell of a season. And, you know, maybe he would have walked away with a Calder. Were the Vancouver Canucks heading towards the playoffs?
No.
So all I'm saying is it should hold a little bit more weight than it does with all these individual awards. And that's why I said I love the Rocket, because it's cut and dry. It's black and white. Did you lead the league in scoring or didn't you? Same deal with the Art Ross. But when you're talking about Hart, when you're talking about Norris, and you're talking about Rookie of the Year or Coach of the Year, I think the things that your team has gone through and the impact you have on all areas of the game, not just points, should hold a little more weight.
Which is why they maybe should have two defense awards. Maybe they should have the Bobby Orr Award for the guy that is Erik Karlsson of whatever season. And then they should have the Norris for the Drew Doughty guy.
Yeah, who's the best shutdown guy?
Yeah. Makes a huge difference. 1453, the Capitals are still storming. Backstrom has a cross-crease play that Helly has to make a huge pad save on, keeping this a one-goal game. Washington then proceeds to take its first penalty of the game. This is Oshie slashing in the offensive zone on Tanev. So that kind of negates the rest of the power play, which would have been a minute 15 of power play time after Ovi had scored 5-on-3, if you remember correctly, to go back to that. Leaves 43 seconds of 4-on-4 play. 58 seconds after the Washington goal has been scored, Lars Ellers leaves the cap zone and makes a back pass that gets intercepted by Nikolai Ehlers.
He telegraphed that shit. You need to know who is on the ice, and that is the last guy you should be playing around the puck being around. And Ehlers saw it. He saw his eyes. I saw it when I was watching. I was like, oh. And then he took it, burnt the guy on the outside. And
Orlov, by the way.
Yeah,
Orlov.
Who gives a fuck? You can burn him on the outside, but that's accurate. Orlov, yeah, he got schooled by Ehlers, and then he goes and buries it on the five-hole. But what are you thinking? That's Nikolai Ehlers. Don't fool around with the puck, buddy. 1-1.
27th goal of the year for Nick Ehlers. Yeah, Orlov is their top pairing D in Washington. He's one of their top defensemen. It's not just
so I would
anybody.
Say, just like the Leafs, that would be my main area of concern.
So, Ehlers 27th, 1-1 game. The Jets at that 1:15 get a power play after the 4-on-4 play. The best chance of that power play is 12:58. Laine has a blast that stopped on the power play. So he is still not on the board in the Ovi versus Laine
saga.
Washington had done about 3 icings to 1 by the 6:14 mark in the game since the Ehlers goal. There was another chance for Ehlers at 5:54 where Grubauer has to make a big stop. Laine sets Ehlers coming up into the slot on a short area pass, and Grubauer has to stop that one. So again, the Jets and Caps, a lot of, you know, chances trading offense in this hockey game, and a lot of penalties. Washington gets one, Oshie again hooking on Wheeler. That's followed by Perreault tripping Wilson in the jet zone. And then there's a couple of great saves by Connor Hellebuck, and can't go without mentioning this, but it is one of the takeaways at the end of the game is Connor Hellebuck's playing this game. He stopped Backstrom short side at 216, and then Backstrom kind of basically bats down a bouncing puck and directs it on net, and Helly has to make another big stop with about 25 seconds left in the period.
I thought it was one of his most athletic games. I thought he made some incredible saves. We usually talk about Helly in how good he is positionally, so he doesn't allow a lot of rebounds, and so he doesn't have to make that crazy dramatic save, but he made some big time, like, game changing keep you in the game on the road saves, I thought, in this Capitals team.
Washington 1-for-3 on the power play. Winnipeg 0-for-2 in the first. Shots 14-8 Washington. So Washington kind of did bring the play a bit to the Winnipeg Jets, and I guess the additional power play time probably shows the difference in the shots too, because having a two-man advantage is going to allow you to get some more shots on 100%. That. In the second period, it takes less than a minute for Nick Ehlers to get another chance. He corrals a loose puck and then goes in tight on Grubauer, but he gets stopped. So Grubauer is making some key saves to keep this a 1-1 hockey game. High-end scoring chance, 16:47, first line pressure and a wraparound attempt by Kyle Connor for the Winnipeg Jets. However, at 16:07, there's a scramble off a faceoff in the jet zone. The first shot is blocked by Byfuglien. There's a save made by Helly. The third attempt, Ovi flips over a sprawled out Helly to put in the net. If I remember correctly, actually, Helly stops the puck twice and then Ovi flips it over. And Buff's block is before that.
Yeah, Helly spread eagle that makes a great save. And then Buff was right there, a little slow to react. And then Laine, he actually joked after the game. And he said that he had the best seat in the house. So easy to remember that 600th goal for Ovechkin because he's right there. And I think both those guys would have liked to be able to take that opportunity. But you know what? That goes to show. I mean, fourth quickest ever to score 600 goals. There's a reason for that. Not only does Ovechkin blast one-timers, but he's not afraid to go to the blue paint. And he sticks with it. That showed some stick-to-itiveness there. You know, he wanted it more than Buff and Laine did in that spot. So you just got to chalk that up as a lesson learned if you're Laine. And good goal by Ovi. Put the Caps up.
Yeah, his second of the game, 42nd of the year, 600th of the career. That's a big marker on that one.
And 2-0 on the game, Ovi-Laine matchup. Yeah. 2-0 Ovi.
But we're in a 2-1 hockey game.
Hey, that wasn't the storyline going in, right? Remember, didn't mention all the guys the Jets are missing. It's all about that match. Hey, it's exciting, so don't be too shitty about it.
It's almost like the league would have canceled the game if Ovi or Laine couldn't play.
Sorry, we got to reschedule.
Yeah, we're rescheduling the game. But the fact that the Jets have a complete line of players out of the lineup of regulars, no mention of that. The Jets do actually get a few chances and continue to trade chances, I guess, with the Washington Capitals through the second period. Kyle Connor stopped in the slot by Grubauer, and then he puts a rebound just wide at 14:44. There's a high-end scoring chance where Connor Hellebuck comes across the net to stop Backstrom backdoor at 14:06. Great save.
Huge save.
That's followed up at 10:54, where Ehlers is stripped by Kuznetsov at the Jets' blue line and forces Helly to make another big stop.
Shit pass by Buff on this one, though. That rewatching that, I said, like, Buff, it's your job as the passer. Two people have jobs. As the guy away from the puck, you got to make sure you got to be aware of your surroundings and how close the defenders are to you. At the same time, the passer is leading the guy ahead, right? And Ehlers did a little pivot and he was kind of skating backwards and he had to reach back for the puck. I mean, you got a guy coming at you full blast from behind you and you can't even see him coming. It's just not a good pass to make on your outlet pass. It's not a safe pass. Put Ehlers in a bind. Got to be a little stronger on the stick. But yeah, you know, they picked his pocket and got a good scoring chance.
That's where Ehlers behind it needs to just do a get a stick on it, do a chip behind him against the boards, and then go forward with it. That's the play that I would say that he makes instead of trying to corral it and then having it stripped.
Well, I think if you don't have if you notice that he didn't have much puck support right there. And I think in that spot, you don't want to be doing your little pivot, turning your back to the play at the same time. You know, even there, yeah, better to kind of like stop up and then just make a little chip play off the boards.
Yeah, I just think he could have chipped it off the boards to himself and avoided the turnover to Kuznetsov, regardless of whether you say Buff made an errant pass and put him in a bad spot. I still think there were things he could have done better to avoid the turnover. Half a dozen of this, half a dozen of the other.
I think with Nikolaj Ehlers, it is one of those circumstances you wish he did something different. That being said, the way he creatively spins his body, and he does things that look dangerous often, and sometimes it's a shitty turnover that costs you, but it seems like so many other times it really creates something for the Jets. So you just take the good with the bad.
High-end scoring chance where Kopp feeds Matty Perreault, who is the most snake-bitten Winnipeg Jet, and still to this point is. But going back to this game, losing track of it, but top of the blue paint, and Grubauer stops the Perreault deflection. You know, Grubauer made his saves in this game too. We won't kid you on that one. Verana can't put away a wraparound chance on Helly at 9:45. At 8:09, Carlson makes a great defensive play to block a pass Line A to Ehlers on a 2-on-1, so the Jets can't get anything off of that. And Washington finally then takes a penalty. And Perreault doing the other things, because even though he's snake bitten, he's still hard on the puck. Beagle takes a slashing penalty on him. And that's why Perreault's still in the lineup. And actually, people are actually acknowledging the fact that Perreault's still in the lineup, even though his numbers have just stopped, I guess, on the offense, because he's still hard on the puck.
He does so many great things. He's hard on forecheck, hard on the back check. He throws his weight around. He mucks it up in front of the net, works hard to screen. He's had tons of those third assists, play that led to the play that you don't get points for. A couple at the last second, they get taken away. Oh, it banked off a shin pad or hit a skate lace, and he had points taken away from him over the stretch, too. It's not like he's not around the puck. It's not like he's not creating. He's just been snake bit.
Blake Wheeler at 7:30 puts it off the post short side on that power play, and that was one of two high-end scoring chances. 6:58, Laine gets a blast through, and Grubauer makes a prayer of a stop. That's where he was sliding across, and just luckily it hit him, but not really positionally there for it. You just kind of like, oh, get over there. Oh, thank God it hit me. Couple good chances for the Jets. At 1:04, Wheeler gets caught up with Carlson, and his stick hits Backstrom, and there's no call, so kind of a nice thing for the Jets on that one. And Helly still has to make a blocker save before the second period ends on Oshie to keep this at 2-1 after two periods of play. Shots 13-10 for Washington, so they have a 27-18 through two periods of play lead on the shot total. Oh, and it did actually write down the goal drugs. Now keep in mind, this is a Washington game. So Perreault had one in his last 19 games. Kyle Connor had gone 7 games without one. Wheeler had gone 7 games without one. And Brian Little had gone 9 games without a goal.
Doesn't the Kyle Connor one seem like a distant memory now?
Well, the only one that's still kind of on that pair is the Perreault one, because you're adding another. That's going to be one in his last 25 now as we're recording this. That's crazy. And here's a guy that was on pace to, I think he was on pace to be at 30 goals.
I mean, he's had some high-end scoring chances, and I think for the most part, he's not logo hunting. He's getting stoned. He's dinging some posts. He's right there.
So, funny conversation I had with Roscoe, unrelated to this, but just worth mentioning because it's just so funny. Like, remember those guys in the playoffs that on another team that just came out of nowhere and put up a bunch of goals? So we're talking about like the John Druses, the like Brian Bickles, that end up being like, you know, near the top for the goal scoring race at the end of the playoffs on a team that makes a run. Just throwing this out there right now, if I was going to pick a guy from the Winnipeg Jets that's such a streaky guy, it's always in the mix, Matty Perreault's that guy. He could end up being like the John Drews of the, who's some of the other guys that, you know, one-year wonders that no other, like, everybody else in the league doesn't know about Matty Perreault. Winnipeg Jets fans do. But he's like, he could be our John Drews of this year's playoffs and just end up leading the team in goal scoring.
Another guy's like a Matt Cullen throughout his career, known for scoring clutch goals in the playoffs, but not a big producer in the regular season.
Yeah.
There's certain guys that just seem to step up and they make things happen and you don't expect it, you know? So, I mean, that being said, I mean, Cullen was a great pro and had more offense in this game than Brian Bickle for the most part. Yeah, he's a definite surprise. It happens. It's just so weird, you know?
That's my pick, though. If I was going to pick a guy that's just...
You know who I think's going to score a clutch game winner? I think Joel Armia. He's one of those guys, another guy like a Matthew Perreault, that I just think we haven't seen the finish that we're going to see from him. He's got 12 goals on the season. He's been playing his best hockey without a doubt, and he's a guy that can roll up and down the lineup and do power play for you, but I think he's all around the puck right now. He's being really strong down low. He's creating a lot of good opportunities, and I can just see that guy being a guy that scores a clutch goal for the Jets down the stretch and in the playoffs.
Going into the third period, there's a couple of chances where Buff fans and Smith-Pelly also fans in the slot for each team in the first minutes of the game. Smith-Pelly slashes Little in the neutral zone, no call. The liberties that people get away with taking on Brian Little bite my tongue. 14:58, the Jets get the tying goal. Ehlers helps Dustin Byfuglien along the sideboards. And then Ehlers is able to get it to Stastny in the corner. Byfuglien gets it to Stastny in the corner. Then there's a pass to Laine into the slot. Then he puts it 5-hole to Grubauer. I'm sure you could have explained that goal a lot more prettier than me.
Yeah, well, that's the gist of it. Buff had it up top, kicked it down to Stastny in the corner. And funny thing, I listened to the Washington recording of this.
Oh, nice.
And they go, this is what their announcer goes. He goes, uh-oh. He says, as soon as Stastny passes to Laine, like just before the puck gets to Laine, he goes, uh-oh, and then he fucking scores. It's so funny. It's like, that's not the guy you want to leave alone in the slot.
that's a good reaction, though.
Just not totally professional, just at, like, almost as a fan for a second, he just went, uh-oh.
Patrick Laine gets his 41st of the year from Stastny and Byfuglien. Ehlers with that third helper that just doesn't get put on the board. But his help along the sideboard freed up space for Byfuglien to get it down to Stastny.
Perfect example. That third assist drives the puck deep and he creates it, but he doesn't even get a goal or assist for it. So there you go.
So Laine at this point would have extended his point streak to 12 games and put him at a combined 77 goals. And Ducky was the next guy to catch on that list at 85. It's also the point streak record for the franchise at 12 games.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. And he's 19. I reiterate, 19. That's a thing that they say he's young, but that's young is 21. Young is 22. We're talking about a kid that's 19 years old and he's just absolutely killing it.
Rozel has a chance shortly after that goal. Not even shortly after that goal. Like 4 seconds he drives to the net and gets a shot. And then there's a nice shoulder save by Helly on Oshie at 14:25. Notable only because that face-off that follows is when Matt Hendricks actually gets injured. So he kind of slips off the face-off and falls awkwardly to the ice on the one side of his skate.
I'm going to say something terrible, okay? Prepare for it, okay? This is kind of a good thing for the Jets. You should never say an injury is a good thing. I feel for him and it sucks. But you know what? You know that awkward conversation they were going to have with Matt Hendricks towards his end of his career, maybe his last chance to have a chance to play for a playoff team, pushing for the cup, being in the lineup. There was going to be an awkward conversation that probably came where Matt Hendricks was going to become a healthy scratch by choice. Now that didn't happen because shitty, Hendricks got hurt and he's out for whatever it is, 4 to 6 weeks or something along that time frame. So he will be back and he'll be ready. He'll be an option for the playoffs. But now it's like, well, what do we look like with the other guys that they've inserted in the lineup? And then they weigh the pros and cons of that. And there probably will be a conversation with Hendricks to say, you know, this is the direction we're going kind of thing. And he'll be a rah-rah, awesome guy in the dressing room for the Jets, which we've talked about multiple times in different podcasts, how we envisioned that playoff roster, that he'd probably be the outside looking in. But now, instead of having to have that conversation while he's healthy, it's kind of like, no, you're just not going back into the lineup, which is a little bit easier of a conversation, you know?
On that, I don't disagree with. I just wish they could have, if he was healthy, and as the team got healthier, given him, you know, days off, so he didn't have to play. Because I remember we were a podcast or two ago, and you were talking about when Hendricks being healthy, that he just couldn't play every day, and it would be better just to have him out of the lineup, but we had so many injuries he had to play. Now the team's back to better health, except that he's one of the guys injured, and he probably wouldn't be an everyday guy, but he's just such a good character to have around that him being injured does keep him away from being able to, you know, do a
but come playoff team, he'll be right back there. You know, and then that'll be their choice. I mean, the Oilers did it last year. They dressed him and he went for a skate around the rink and did the pregame with him and was right there with them. It could happen. The Jets could do the exact same thing. And yeah, we did talk in the past about Matt Hendricks. When he has a couple days, when they had a stretch of games where they had some time off, we saw a different Matt Hendricks. I mean, he's not the swiftest of foot in general, but he was faster and he was laying the body way more. There's been stretches over the last little while where I didn't really see that physicality to from Hendricks that we saw early on in the season, and that's the guy he has to be. You know, he's got to be out there blocking shots. He's thrown in way more fights this year, but I just think the most effective Hendricks is a guy that has a couple days rest. And so that is an option for Paul Maurice going forward when he is healthy. If you want to bring him in, you know, he's playing every second game, every third game. Maybe just you throw him in one night to kind of, if you lose one game in the playoffs, you're like, let's stir the pot, let's get Hendy back in there and see what happens, then you do it.
And I think that's the reason why he's here. There's that option as long as he's healthy. It's just unfortunate right now that we're not getting to see a bit more of him. And I'm not saying he'd be an everyday player right now.
You feel for the guy a bit too, right?
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, it's the tail end of his career here. You know, this was an exciting time for him, and now to have to be on the back burner, and even if he gets back healthy and he's 100% good to go, there's no telling whether he'll get another shot to go back in.
13 minutes. Actually, you know what? There's a couple things I need to say. 13-18, Connor has a 1T in the slot set up by Wheeler. Grubauer makes a great stop. High-end scoring chance. But 18 seconds later, Ovi stands up Nick Ehlers with his head down just outside the Jets' blue line. Ovi can still lay some body. I mean, it was Ehlers, but still. He had his head down.
That's what I always loved about Ovi's game, is that kind of broke the mold. Similar to like a Peter Forsberg. Although Swedish players were kind of known for being a little tougher than Russian players back in the day. The kind of the reputation for being a little bit softer, playing more of a perimeter game, and Ovechkin broke the mold when it comes to that. So I always like that. I don't like it when he's hitting Nikolai Ehlers, mind you, but respect it.
High-end scoring chances continue through the third period. Burakovsky is stopped short side by Helly, and Myers gets a stick on it as well. The Jets, not to be left out of the equation, 6:46. Ehlers gets it to Stastny, tries to pass to Laine. It goes off a Cap's skate, and then off a bounce, it almost goes in. 6:10, Ehlers sets up Little, and Grubauer has to make a big glove save on that one. 5:42, Dustin Byfuglien dumps Smith Pelly, net front, takes a high stick from Pelly, no call on it.
I'm getting really irritated with that shit. I'm not going to go on a huge rant about it, but I'm really getting tired of the fact that people do try to take liberties with Buff, and like whether it's they're in a scrum and sometimes he grabs the two guys at the same time first. But it's like people are allowed to take liberties and cheap shots, and because Buff isn't a pussy and doesn't fall over like crying about it, doesn't do the ham drop thing, which actually goes to what you were talking about Brian Little. That's what I think why Brian Little, you know, he gets little plays against them where they should probably be called, but he doesn't throw his head back. He's kind of a little more old school. And same with Buff. Buff's not going to show that you hurt him even a little bit. But it's like, just because they don't act all dramatic about it doesn't mean a penalty didn't happen.
Yeah. Smith Pelly high sticks him after he gets dropped.
And
that's a penalty.
And just because we do go off on tangents about Buff being like the shitty things he's done, he's playing some really good hockey right now, and his physicality has gone through the roof. Remember earlier we were talking, and it's probably about 10 podcasts has to go now, but we're just like, Buff, all I want you to do is hit people. I don't even need you to produce points for us. Just be solid and don't be a ghost, because we can't have you being a ghost throughout the game. You have to be a factor and keep your game simple. And I think he's done all those things and then some, because he's also bringing the offense and picking his spots good, rushing up in the play, really being an X factor, the guy that we needed him to be.
Yeah, he was saving it up.
I know. It's so funny because we had that talk and you're like, I thought it was funny, like a joke, like, oh, yeah, maybe he's just cruising for the year because, you know, he knows the Jets are going to make the playoffs and he wants to save his energy. And I was like, that's ridiculous. He's a professional. You're a professional. You can't just straight West Coast it for half a season. And you're like, no, I think he probably is. And I'm like, I don't know, man, but he's fucking playing terrible and he better step up his game. And we had a bunch of conversations about it. And then here he is, sure enough. You were right, I guess. He was just fucking, you know, kicking back, relaxing for half the season because this is the Buff that we wanted when we signed him to that long-term contract.
Yeah, you get some fishing in early in the season. It's a long season.
He's a big boy. Takes a while to start his engine all the way.
And at the time I was just kind of like, well, I hope that's the case. It kind of seems
like, right, it kind of seemed different like that. They're two different Buffs. The guy we saw for the first half of the season was not a difference maker, not in a positive way. And now who the fuck's this guy?
This guy that's laying guys out and playing
like
phenomenal.
In a serious way. Anyways, whatever. I just fucking had to talk about the fact that Buff is a scary dude right now.
Yeah. There's a nice stretch pass from Wilson. It goes off Kuznetsov's stick, so that's who was going to receive it. And he luckily isn't able to catch up to the puck. 4-1, though, Washington's still pressing. Carlson is robbed by Helly in the slot, and then Oshie is denied on the rebound at 4-1. And even with 15 seconds left, Helly has to make a pad save on Ovi in the high slot. This game goes to overtime, tied at 2. big point for the Winnipeg Jets. Keep in mind that the game before they had lost to Philadelphia, and we're going to talk about Nashville after, but getting the point on the road was a big thing for the Winnipeg Jets in this game, and that was the result. Well, I guess we should talk about overtime, and then we'll talk about the takeaways.
Well, Wheeler and Little had a 2-on-1, and that's opportunity knocking to take 2 points. Wheel sauces it over, and the Washington player makes an amazing diving defensive play to stop the high-end scoring chance. The puck immediately goes up the other way, and then Kuznetsov, see, I fuck it up too, gets a breakaway, and he rips a really hard shot top shelf, and that's all she wrote. I mean, like, that's pretty much all you need to say about overtime. And
there was some crazy shit going on there, even before. Like,
yeah, I was just throwing the punchline.
Because
the whole game was a back and forth affair with tons of opportunities.
You got to remember, Little gets a penalty for slashing on Kuznetsov, this ghost fucking call right in overtime at 4:41. So Little can't get any love on guys fucking.
Yeah, I know. Slashing him. He can't get a call for getting slashed, but fuck, he gives a guy a little.
So you got
tap.
You got 4-on-3 play, which the Jets actually kill off. But Backstrom goes cross seam, and Carlson rips one tee. Hell, he makes a huge save. Then he stops Oshie on the rebound pretty much just like right before the third end. Ovi had a 1-tee stop by Helly at 3:15. He stops Ovi again at 2:46. 2:38, Eller has a backdoor chip and then just wide short side after a backhand pass. Then at 1:32, there's a glove save by Helly.
It's not a boring game.
Okay? Now, all that happens before that 2-on-1. The Jets survive all that. And then, by the way, they said it was Backstrom. It was not Backstrom. It was Stephenson. And that break of the 2-on-1 and Stephenson's play is what leads to Kuznetsov going the other way.
Wasn't it? It was an incredible play.
Yeah.
Right? You got to give props for that play. If he doesn't make that play, that could be game over right there.
So the cross pass on the 2-on-1, he dives to prevent the pass and then gets the puck to Kuznetsov. And Kuznetsov gets it past Buff and avoids a check, plus getting the puck out. And Buff's in a tough spot on that because it's coming back fast the other way. He probably takes a penalty if he makes contact with them. I'm sure they're just going to call another one on us. He tries to go for the puck, and he doesn't get the puck. It's Kuznetsov. And then, high blocker, goal scorer shot, 21st of the year. Game winner, Washington, with 49 seconds left.
I would argue, Helly's got 6 shutouts and a ton of wins under his belt where he's played great. But that, to me, was like, out of all the games that he's lost, outside of a game against the Blues, really, where he played unreal as well. But he was really impressive in this game against the Caps. You take the loss, but he stole the point.
So Ovi gets a 600 career. Patrick Laine does keep his point streak, but Ovi kind of gets the win on that one, 2-1. Hellebuck, 43 shots, 40 saves, where the Jets get less than 30 in the same game, and the Jets get an extra point. I think Hellebuck's the other takeaway on this.
On the road, yep. We'll take it.
So that's the first night of the back-to-backs, and they have to go in the Tuesday night, end of the road trip, 6th game of this road trip, and they're in Nashville, first in the Central. Nashville is 44-14-10. At this point, when they're playing Nashville, Nashville's on a 9-0-1 in the last 10, having only just lost in a shootout loss to New Jersey 3-2. They'd actually won 10 straight prior to that. Great home record, 24-7-4, 15-4-2 in the division. The Jets 11-7-2 in the division by comparative. And the Jets are 17-11-8 now on the road.
Jets players still have tons of key guys on the shelf going into this Predators game as well, so that's a no.
Oh, it just gets worse. Goals for, though, Nashville 7th this year. Power play 5th. Goals against, they were ranked 1st going into this game. The PK was 11th, and faceoff, they were 4th. The Jets, a little better on the goals for and the power play at 4th and 2nd. Goals against, though, they're 5th, and then PK 6th, and faceoffs was 5th. Still phenomenal, the improvement on the numbers by the Winnipeg Jets from this year and last year. However, we will say, Mark Scheifele was now out for his 3rd straight. Jacob Trouba was missing his 19th. Adam Lowry had missed the last 25 of 27. Enstrom was out for 6 of 7. This is the second game Kulikov makes. Matt Hendricks went down in the Washington game. So, what could possibly go worse for the Jets? Paul Stastny leaves during the warm-up.
No kidding. I was like, fuck sakes, you gotta be kidding me. Like, one more?
this the list.
And it's not even just one word. Stastny, with Mark Scheifele out, Stastny, Ehlers, and Laine have been the number one line. So now you lose that. You got to juggle. And there's a trickle-down effect that happens to every single line. And now you got fucking, what was it? Was it Joe? Who was it? Mathias that stepped in the lineup when Stastny went out?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now you lose Stastny off the most dynamic line in hockey and your best line at this point, and instead you replaced them with mediocre mitts. So that was not exactly a sign of good things to come. Jesus.
Put it to you this way. Mark Scheifele, Adam Lowry, Matt Hendricks, and Paul Stastny are all generally, when they're in the lineup, playing center ice. That is a total of 4 centermen not in the lineup. Adding in your top minute, one of your top minute D-men and 2 other guys that basically are, you know, second, third pairing D.
Well, and I said it before. Regulars. I said it before and I'll say it again. Even though Mark Scheifele is their number one center and incredibly offensive dynamic player, and even though Trouba is either 1 or 2, whatever you want to call him, in my mind he's 2 because I think Morrissey's the best defenseman on the team. You're missing Adam Lowry, and he's the guy that shuts down the opposition's best line. And in this game, just like when the Jets played the LA Kings previous without Lowry, and when they play him with Lowry, it changes the entire dynamic, as well as Brandon Tanev. Those are 2 guys that are under the radar, and those are the guys that you need in the lineup against the other team's best.
The no love line.
And
we will get back to the no love line.
Back together. Reunited. Feels so good.
Okay. They were reunited. Few games. They were not reunited at this point.
No, they were not reunited for this game.
Wheeler has to go and play center, and they actually put him between Laine and Ehlers to make that the top line. This is how many centers out. So now Brian Little is going to play with Joel Armia and Kyle Connor in the second line because no Stastny. That alone just affected the first 2 lines, snap of a finger. The third line is Rozel, Kopp, and Perreault. They had been that third line going forward. So, yes. Now, with Hendy both going down and Stastny going down, yes, Mitts Mathias drew in to play center on the fourth line. Marco Dano drew in again. And Brandon Tanev was playing, I believe, his second game back.
Mediocre Mitts and Ghost Mathias. I'm adding to that.
And, of course, Stastny goes down right near the beginning of the game. So this happens last minute when everything gets thrown into the blender with what they're going to do.
Well, that's what makes it so much worse, man. It's not just that guys came out of the lineup. It's the timing. You know, you're going in with a game plan and they didn't get to do a morning skate. They could have done a morning skate together. It's not like they don't all play together and practice together, but there's a difference. They get to roll lines together, and then Stastny leaving at the last second. It's just too much, man. Yeah, like you said, putting all these lines into a blender and it changes your entire complexion of your...
So the slow start to this game is really, that is a huge factor on it. Also worth noting is that, yeah, Tucker Poolman and Joe Morrow are the third pair D in this game because of all these injuries. Nothing wrong with that. Just saying that these guys are healthy scratches when other guys are available.
Yeah, and unfortunately, which is becoming a trend lately in this game against the Predators here, Jets once again fall victim to taking penalties early in the game and having to fuck with their lines that way as well.
Yeah, 1970, Brian Little holding on Subban, although it was called hooking. Subban was holding Little's stick. I believe Paul Maurice was right to say that call was so bad. Yeah, Maurice, you could see that he was livid and dropping F-bombs on the bench on that great penalty call.
You could see it on the replay. Maybe it's because it happened fast. I got to say, out of all the games the Jets have played against the Predators, every single game, Subban gets away with something like this. You can call it a vet move, call it a little bit of a dirtball move.
I don't want Winnipeg to boo Subban anymore while he's at the rink. I just want it to be quiet, as if to be like, yeah, you know what? We don't even care about you. Like, you're not even worth booing. Like, we'll boo somebody else that's better than you. Like, can we boo Johansson? Can we boo Ellis?
No, and here's why. Because Subban is a fucking prick. Those other guys are better players. He's not getting booed because he's the best player, although that is traditionally what you do. The reason why I think all the crowd is booing Subban instead of Roman Josi, who's a very classy, solid player and a more talented player by far, the reason why they're booing Subban is because he does fucking little Brad Marchand-y things all the time. Brad Marchand has the bad rep, but Subban isn't any better. Maybe to have a good name, all you have to do is donate money to a charity and it be well known, because that's what Subban did. You know what? Great guy, class act off the ice. Actually really enjoy listening to his interviews. I think he's funny. He's got that good charisma and all that, but I hate when they play plays the Jets because, and you know what, a little bit of props he gets, he could say he gets under the Jets' skin, but I hate that he's a little shit who pokes and prods and does little face washes when the guy can't defend himself. But then when it's time to step up to the plate and throw down a little bit, he won't do it. He never does it. And he does these little plays that I guess you could say is a vet move and it's a good thing. But he gets away with murder, it seems like. I don't know if it's a respect factor because he's an all-star and blah, 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 or what the deal is. But it does seem like he draws a lot of penalties on the Jets. And he gets away with ones that we talked about it a million podcasts ago. About the time that the refs 5 feet away in Brandon Tanev, no love line, young rookie that isn't a superstar, is having his face pushed into the ground and face washed. 5 feet away is the ref, and does his hand go up? No, but if the reverse were to happen, we all know Brandon Tanev is going to the box. It seems like he gets a little bit of favoritism from the rest. He's a good player, but that's why I believe Jets fans boo him, because he's a little shit who does a lot of things. Throughout the year, he's tried to take out Shifley's knees how many times? So, I mean, he's tried to injure our players. He talks a big, loud game. He barks the loudest, but he never steps up and fights. And it's a bitch move that I think Winnipeg fans don't respect, and that's why everybody boos every time that fucker touches the puck.
Well, I hope that's
just my opinion. I could be wrong. Maybe they are booing him because they all think he's the best player on their team. But I think Winnipeg fans are educated enough for the most part. I mean, some are just going because it's an experience, it's entertainment, and they're Jets fans because it's fun to go out and cheer for your team. And you know what? You need fans like that too. But I'm talking about the diehards, the guys that actually watch game in and game out and really are passionate about hockey. They know that Subban is a talented player, but he's not their best defenseman. He's not their best player. And I think, you know, the only reason they're booing him is like, fuck you, man. We know when you get the chance, you're going to face wash Shifley. You're going to give a little butt end. You're going to grab and hold. You're going to bitch and complain about every single call. You know, people always talk shit about Crosby being a crybaby, which that's another podcast entirely talking about that bullshit. Because he's not, he's tough as nails. And when he went up against the Predators last year, they were trying to get under his skin, and he never fucking, he didn't even let it affect him. He showed no emotion. Yeah, and of course, PK Subban was one of those guys trying to get under his skin. And it goes under the radar all the time. So, you know, good props to the Jets fans. Stay on that shit. I like that when you boo them. But with other guys that they boo, I like those players. And they aren't booing them just because they're their best player. And to me, it's like, I get it. But it doesn't hold that same value. It's like you're just doing it to do it.
Brad Marchand's going to be in town with the Bruins.
I swear I love Brad Marchand, but I do not, like, because he's a rat. And I get why people hate him. It's just the same reason why I always talked about Brendan Lemieux, why I think I'm excited for the day that he becomes a Winnipeg Jet. He gets under everybody's skin, and he does do cheap shots. I don't want anybody to get hurt. We can't have any more guys get hurt. And I don't trust Brad Marchand to not try to go after Laine or try to go after Ehlers or go after Shifley. So that's my concern about that game.
Well, they've got to get through the game. They played a really good game in Boston that went into extra time.
Yeah.
The Jets and the Bruins. Which was ages ago. It was a 2-1 game. Even I think it was just before Christmas, actually. The only time that those two teams met.
Yeah, it was physical, and there wasn't a lot of room to breathe. And Tuukka Rask had a really good game against the Jets. Ellie played solid as well.
Michael Hutchinson got the start in this game. And I will just say, got the start in the game. You know, and I won't even go through his numbers. Pekka Rinne was in net for Nashville Predators. I will say, Johansson gets a shot that goes off of Hutch's mask at 17:58. The play continues, and it continues to bother him, the mask does, on Hutch. And at about 17:36, he finally is able to shake it off to stop the play. And he was sitting there shaking it to basically try and get it to come off.
Yeah, I mean, and the Preds' first goal that they got in this game, it was a tic-tac-toe play that was finished by Fiala. That second goal that gets scored on Hutch, like you said, it was moments earlier where he was shaking it off and he had to fix it.
No, the first goal. That's before the first goal. Meaning he takes a shot to the head before the first goal even goes in.
For the tic-tac-toe goal?
Yeah.
Well, regardless, I think he was feeling the effects for sure on that second one. And for sure on the third one as well. So you don't know for sure, but like you have vision issues when you get a concussion. He was having a headache and he was feeling the symptoms. That's why he pulled himself out of the game.
It's 17:58 when Johansson gets that shot off of Hutch's mask. And he's sitting there shaking his head for basically 20 plus seconds before he can get that mask to come off. It's 17:12, and that's when, and keep in mind, Nashville's still going on. They're coming into the zone just as the power play expires. And yeah, then the Josi with the give and go to Turris, to Fiala on the back pass and high glove.
That's a beautiful play. Yeah. I mean, that's a goal 9 times out of 10 anyways. But the two after, you got to wonder what the effect was. And how honest was Hutch right off the bat that he was feeling that way? Did it take a while to come on? Because they say depending on the level of concussion, the degree of it, you know, it could take a little bit longer for symptoms. Or think about the fact that Hutch is still trying to prove himself. He's trying to prove that he's an everyday NHL goalie. And the last thing he wanted to do was give away this start.
Let's look after at what happens. 16:42, Austin Watson, who, by the way, didn't play last night in Winnipeg because he got hurt in mini, and there's really no information on if that's long-term or short-term. He cross-checks Brian Little in the neutral zone, no call. He's another one of those guys that really gets under the Jet skin. But 15:45, Hutchinson makes a shoulder save on Philip Forsberg. 15:12, Hutch stops a blast from Johansson again. At 14:54, Hutch kicks out a toe save on Emelin. At this point, the shots are 9-0 for Nashville. It's still a 1-0 game. Fiala runs out of room and can't pass it in front of the net, and Hutch covers up at 13:50. At this point, the shot attempts are 15-0 Nashville at that 13:49 mark. Fisher interferes with Nick Ehlers behind the net. There's no called on that. Finally, there's a delayed penalty on Nashville when Fisher trips up Myers. So they finally call a penalty on Nashville almost halfway through the first period. Like I said, so Hutch made some stops before giving up those second and third goals. He was affected before, and you know, it could be he gets more shaken up because of the toe save on Emelin. There's some other stuff that happened in this sequence, but he does take the puck right off the head before the first goal. Unfortunately, Nashville gets a pair of goals shorthanded 34 seconds apart on this Jets power play.
Without a doubt, the worst power play of the year.
First time Nashville has scored 2 shorthanded goals on the same power play. Austin Watson, his 12th from Ellis. He has a 2-on-1. Buff takes away the pass, but Watson beats Hutch clean glove hand side again. Same pretty much spot as the first one. And then 11:19, Rozzo can't connect on a given goal in the slot to get the pass back to Ehlers. And Arvidsson forces Myers to turn over the puck at the Jets line. Forsberg, who gets it net to an open
Arvidsson. That was a terrible reverse. Terrible decision by Myers on that play. He needs to know that he's the last man back. He doesn't have a safety net behind him. You got to hold on to that puck. You can't just go blind pass up the boards. I've really liked Myers' game. This is a terrible decision on that play.
And Forsberg gets it back to Arvidsson in front. He spins and puts it top glove shelf. So Arvidsson's 26, his forecheck. And I looked at the replay because I was like, oh, maybe Forsberg brings it in offside. No, it was right on the line. That was a good goal. So 3-0 Nashville, and again, 34 seconds apart. And you're just like, holy crow, the Jets are getting lit up. Hutchinson pulls himself at this point, and Connor Hellebuck comes in. Hutchinson had let 3 goals against him, 12 saves. So 3 goals and 15 shots. And the Jets still have 43 seconds of a power play that they've given up 2 short-handed goals on. Crazy, crazy sequence. At 10:38, Ellis breaks in, and he's stopped by Helly on a shot off a Buff stick. At that point, the shots were 16-2 for Nashville. By the time the period ends, they were 24-6 for Nashville at the end of the first period. There were more penalties by the Jets. They managed to keep them off the board, and the Jets had about one really quality scoring chance in the first, where Kyle Connor gets a pass to Laine for a redirect and Rene makes a big stop. Game was physical though. Sherrod had a couple nice big hits. 7:25. The second was an open ice hit at center ice on Emelin. Laid him out. But they still, I don't know, the calls were going one way in the first period. For example, Armia takes a high stick penalty at 6:08 on Yarncroc. But at 5:30, Smith takes a cheap shot at Morrissey cross check, and there's no call.
Something we already expect as Jets fans. When you go on the road, you know you're going to get a few less calls. So yeah, unfortunately, that's how the first period went. You get a break here, you get a call there, then maybe it changes the flow of the game, changes the flow of the period. End up being, you know, it set the Jets up to have to fight through some adversity, though. And, you know, it's of note that Connor Hellebuyck coming in cold, no expectation to play that game, after having a hell of a game against the Washington Capitals where he stood on his head, he comes in and he absolutely locks it down. And he gives the Jets a chance. And they had scoring chances in the second and third period where they would have had a chance to win this game. This game that started off like an absolute debacle. They had a chance to win at the end of the day because Connor Hellebuyck came in and did what a Vezina candidate goalie does. And he came in and he said, we're done. No more goals for you. Yeah, so that's something really positive to take out of that game.
That's very true. So when Smith takes a little poke at Helly at that 5:30 mark, Wheeler drives him into the end boards after the whistle. There's a scrum. Now the Jets get out on the worst side of it because, again, Smith, his cheap shot on Morrissey, there's no penalty. He only gets a roughing penalty. Wheeler gets a cross check. And somehow Ben Sherratt gets 2 minutes for a roughing, which can never be explained. So the Jets have a two-man advantage power play Nashville gets that they have to kill off, that they manage to kill off again.
Again. 5-on-3 again. Remember when I said it's going to be a theme? It's going to be a theme.
And, you know, we can go through, like, bits and pieces on this. The Jets came out, played a lot better in the second. And you're right. Hellebuyck made some big saves in the second period to keep this game 3-0. The Jets didn't get on the board in the second, but they did get into the game and start getting chances. Like Perreault had all sorts of time on a rebound after Pullman gets it to the net at 10:21, 7:57, and Ehlers wrister, which a huge glove save by Rene in the second period. Howie's keeping the Jets in the game, and although they don't score, the shots were 12-11 for Winnipeg after the second period, and they had some chances, and it got evened up. One more thing out of the second period is that right before the period ended, Nashville's Watson and Winnipeg's Josh Morrissey get slashing penalties. Morrissey gives Watson a little tap. Watson turns around with a two-hander. Are you kidding me? This is 4-on-4?
Yeah, explain to me how those penalties crossed each other out.
Yeah, coincidentals.
How the fuck is that coincidental? I thought the same thing. Like, how does Watson not get 4 here? I mean, you said to me, you said fucking 5 in a game, kick his ass out. But I thought he gets an extra 2 there for sure. You can't say tomato, tomato.
Not even close. Like a one-handed tap by Morrissey.
I totally agree. It was absolutely absurd that was the call that was made. And that's kind of how the night went for the Jets. And they fought through it.
Nashville goes into the third, takes another penalty. Kyle Turris holding the stick on little net front. If I was an official now, by the way, because we've watched Nashville through the full 5 games this year with them, that we played them. And maybe I just remember Turris in the Ottawa run last year. But Turris is really good at getting away with holding the stick on guys. Absolutely hate that Ottawa traded Kyle Turris to Nashville. Absolutely hate it. But that's because Kyle Turris is a guy I would love to have on my team because I think he's got really good offensive skills, but he does a lot of little plays that he gets away with. He does actually, you know, get the holding the stick on this one, but he does it a lot and he gets away with it a lot more than he gets called for it.
Yeah, he's the forward version of Subban in that regard, is having those little tricks to get away with shit. Just like on the faceoffs. I mean, they basically instituted these faceoff rules because of guys like Kyle Turris. That's actually what people said about it, was that he was one of the guys that was keyed in on some of those little tricks that he did on the faceoffs that were kind of cheap. So that's why they implemented these rules. And I've noticed the more lax that the linesmen have gotten towards the end of the year here, that he's gotten away with it a few more times against the Jets. And he's a good solid player. Like you said, I'd take him on my team any day. I think that was kind of a lousy deal by the Senators, and a great pickup for the Predators. It's worth noting, like, the Jets got dominated 59% to 41% in the dot. Now, I know that's a stat that, like, people kind of pay attention to, but don't really pay attention to. That's worth noting, because that means those defensemen often are the guys that get the puck right off the draw. You know, you're putting it in some of your most talented players' hands, and they have time of possession, and now you're fighting to get the puck back all the time. So the Jets, they lose Hendricks just recently, and then Stastny goes down, and all of a sudden you're down 2 out of your 4 defensemen, and you're line juggling. And
Scheifele wasn't back either for this game.
Yeah, there you go. That's
3. Lowry, there were 4 centermen. You could literally argue 3 of the 4 regular centermen were out of the game. Only Brian Little would have been in the game. Wheeler was playing center. Little was playing center regularly. Kopp had moved in to play center. And then the 4th line center was Sean Matthias.
Yeah,
for 7 minutes and 22 seconds.
But that face-off stat right there, that screen, that stands out on the page, because the Jets have been one of, or for quite a while, the best face-off team in the NHL. And why that helps you so much is that you get to start with the puck, and that's a huge difference. So this game, that really hurt the Jets, losing all their centers. Like, I mean, fuck.
Yeah, or both, yeah. Yeah, it's just crazy.
Throw in not getting some of the calls that you need to get, and it, you know, you're fighting an uphill battle.
But they battled in this game, and they end up getting on the board, and at least Rene doesn't get a shutout. Laine gets it to Kyle Connor to Wheeler on the sideboards. Wheeler rips the shot, and Connor tucks in the rebound in front, puts it through the five hole. Kyle Connor 23rd on the power play. Wheeler Laine assists. Point streak continues for Laine.
Calder Casey.
And it's sad that I think I joked before Besser got injured about the whole Kyle Connor for the Calder thing. And I said, even if he could catch Besser and finish with five more goals than him, he probably wasn't going to get the nod. I will say that Warren is absolutely correct that late in the season, Kyle Connor has a penchant for getting goals.
Getting goals late. He had an incredible second half in college when he was so close to winning the Hobie Baker Award. Now would be a perfect time to mention it, actually. The Winnipeg Jets have another young kid that is up for the Hobie Baker Award. Now, I don't know, they said his name something like Cease. To me, it looks like Dr. Seuss, but whatever the case may be, this CJ Seuss has been absolutely tearing it up. And once again, the Jets have a Hobie Baker Award finalist.
Signed to entry level. He'll be playing with the Moose before the end of the year.
So expect the Hobie Baker finalist going to the Moose next season, along with Vasilainen, who has recently signed a professional contract with the Winnipeg Jets, and he's expected to play for either the Moose or, sorry, no, he hasn't signed the number. He hasn't signed the dollar amount yet, but he did whatever you do to say that you're coming into the league next year, that you're either going to be in the AHL or the NHL. So those two guys are joining the Moose, who are going after the Calder Cup this year, who are first in their division right now currently. So our minor leagues are only going to get richer for next season as well. So I felt like that was the perfect time to mention that.
Jets almost make it 3-2. Actually, even before that, it's like I can't rush through this stuff. 16:55, right after the Jets make it 3-1. Subban throws Danil to the ice after a battle along the boards. No call. It's a wrestling move.
So Subban got away with it, you said?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Subban just tossed Danil.
That's what I was ranting about earlier. That's exactly the kind of shit he gets away with.
At 16 minutes left in the third, Ehlers does a total drag and gets a shot through on Rene, and then Laine rips it just wide. 15-minute mark, Kelly makes a stop on a point shot and rebound. Yarncroc gets bulldogged to the ice by Dustin Byfuglien. This is, again, the physical nature of Dustin Byfuglien. So, the Dano getting tossed by Subban and Yarncroc getting bulldogged by Buff. There were no calls on either of those. I'm going to let that be
a I'm okay with it. Yeah, that's as long as it goes both ways, I'm okay with it.
11:34, Laine puts the puck through Rene, and Austin Watson clears it from the goal line and over the glass to prevent a goal.
Saves the goal. That was a game changer. If that goes in, it's a one goal game, and it's anybody's game. Big play by
one. So high end scoring chance. Laine did beat Rene, and yes, Watson gets a delay a game for putting it over the glass. 11:03 on that power play, Roslo in the slot. Rene makes a stop, and Bonino gets a stick in the lane as well on that. Rene has to make a blocker save on Laine. Laine did have to do a little bit of a reset before the shot on that one. 9:05, Morrissey leveled Arvidsson at the blue line. The physicality in this game was really good by the Jets, and I'm getting to it. After Josi is on a 2-on-1 and Helle makes a save on Josi and then on the rebound on Sizons, the best hit of the night is Yarncroc getting leveled by Kopp.
Oh yeah, that was a big one. Kopp's been crushing lately, man. He's been crushing. He's been eating his clean fucking
hit.
Wheaties, eh?
Clean hit.
Eating his Wheaties and his protein shakes. That guy's been smashing dudes lately.
And because the Jets had got down 3-0 so early and it looked like it was going to be a blowout, I was messaging and saying, I don't know why we just don't take some guys out. Well, Kopp did that. Yarncroc has not played since that hit. He's been out for now the remainder of the regular season is what they've said, though they don't have a timeline for him to return to the Predators, and he didn't finish that game, and it was that hit. That hit took him out.
It was a perfectly clean hit, too.
So that would be pretty much the rest of this game, although they played some 4-on-4 and some more chippiness before the end, but the Jets couldn't get any closer. They just kind of run out of time coming back. But the takeaways is Connor Hellebuyck flawless in relief, coming in down 3-0, and the game ends up only 3-1, so the Jets avoid a blowout. Two shorthanded goals in one power play are the difference in this game, and considering the fact that the Jets actually, between posts and the one that Laine had beat Rene on that Watson cleared away, they have as many goals in this game as the Predators do with nobody in the lineup.
Yeah, well, that's what my takeaway from this game is. What I really enjoyed about this game is that I love the level of compete that I saw. I saw a team that didn't roll over and die after those two terrible breakdowns that cost them two goals on the power play, and they weren't all woe is me about all the injuries that happened. You know, they got jumped out the gate, but they fought back, like you said. I mean, if Watson doesn't sweep that goal away from the crease there, that it's a one goal game that you're in now. I think you look and you're on the road, keep in mind, and you're not getting all the calls that you probably should, and they could have hung their head and felt sorry for themselves. I like that they fought to the very end. I'm so impressed with Helbig's play. I said earlier, just he comes in and he's like ice. You know, he's got ice in his veins, and he's ready for the big time moments. This guy looks like he's ready for the playoffs. You know, that's what you need from your number one, the confidence. He comes into the game and it's like there's an extra level of swagger from the guys when he's playing behind them. They play different in front of Hellebuck because I believe the belief that he gives them. And so this game, yeah, it was great. You also saw, you know, what the difference is when you have, unfortunately, Mathias and Dano in the lineup at the same time. I think Dano's played pretty well recently, actually, but Mathias, to me, not only does he have mediocre minutes, he's kind of a ghost, and you just can't have both those guys in the lineup at the same time, and too much change too quick when you haven't had a chance to practice together, and you're going up against a really formidable team in the Predators. So all being said, when you threw all the factors in, I'd say a 3-1 loss to the Predators on the road, you know, you can swallow that and take good things away from it.
Back-to-back games, end of a road trip.
Just a lot of obstacles, right? Yeah.
So the Jets ended up on that road trip after going 3-1, of course, then dropping one in overtime and then losing to Nashville. So finished the road trip 3-2-1 for the season on that road trip, 6-game road trip. Come back home where they start a homestand. You're listening to First Class Podcast, all things Winnipeg Jets hockey. Tim Bigelow, Warren Smith. We're actually going to come back with part two, talk about the beginning of the homestand games with Chicago and Dallas. Stick around.